Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lindsay W. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, March 7th, 2024, and today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in the chapter Bill's Story on page 8, the first paragraph that begins with, "No words can tell of the loneliness," through one paragraph ending, "Alcohol was my master." And we will be commenting on one paragraph. Today's readers are, for the 12 steps, Joni C, 12 traditions, Cassie B, and the readers of the text will be Rick J, Nancy C, and Krista F is our backup this morning. The newcomer greeter is Reva P. Our second hour host is Ann A, and our announcements will be given by Robin. The reference numbers for Wednesday, March 6th, 2024 are, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 21,201, that's 21201, and for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 21,202, that's 21202. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, every group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Joni C. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Joni. And I will now ask Cassie B. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Cassie. Kathy, star one to unmute.
I apologize. Thanks. This is Cassie in Ohio. The 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for allowing me to do service. I pass.
Thank you, Cassie. All right, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star one to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star one to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, except the speakers should be muted. So today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are on page 8 in the first paragraph, beginning with, no words can tell of the loneliness, through one paragraph, ending with, alcohol was my master. And I will now ask Rick J. to begin reading for us. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Lindsay. Thanks so much for your service. My name is Rick Jay. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Cary, North Carolina. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Wow, those are such powerful words. And you know, I've always had this paragraph sort of branded into my brain for, you know, this is what the bottom looks like. This is what the bottom feels like. You know, welcome to hell. And we all have been there. Different movie, same director. You know, I was powerless. But beyond powerless, I felt alone, I felt hopeless, I felt broken. I was beyond everything that was dear to me. And to go on living in a way where I was so out of control and everything I thought that I could do, to regain control in my life failed. All the good things, all the good times, all the love, it was beyond me when I was in this place. This place. It's kind of ironic. The paragraph starts off with Bill writing, "No words can tell," and then he does a really good job of telling what the bottom is like, you know, and that loneliness and despair, you know, and that loneliness, that being cut off, that feeling of being cut off from the life around me, cut off from the love around me, unable to do anything that I was trying to do. You know, I have to remember that not only do I want to identify in with how, you know, Bill thought, you know, do I think like he thought, do I eat like he drank, but it's important for me to connect and identify in with feeling like he felt. That was a huge part of why I escaped into food, was to find relief from the incredible, overwhelming feelings of despair, the emotions that I had with nowhere to go. And then I would get the instant relief, which never lasted long. But, you know, I know Bill was going through a lot more than just self-pity. You know, he had major depressions from his parents' divorce, the death of his first love, Bertha Bamford, you know, and I don't think he ever really got over that. And then now he's lost his new love, Lois, and told that, you know, it's all going to end with a heart attack during DTs or wet brain, you know, and he, for him, it's the end. He tried that incredible adventure on the motorcycle and having that whirlwind of success. It's gone, and he's broken, he's alone, he's hopeless, and I have felt that way. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Rick J. from North Carolina, for getting us started. So although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So before I take a list of names, if you would please press star one, unmute, and give me your first name and the first initial of your last name, and we'll come up with a lineup. So who would like to share on this paragraph this morning?
Jason K.
Melissa, Jason, who else would like to share?
Darian K.
Krista F.
Nancy T.
Charlotte T.
Rachel KP.
Great. Right. So I'll tell you who I have. Okay. Great. I've got Melissa C., Jason K., Darian K., Krista F., Nancy T., Charlotte P., Rachel KP., and Robin T. So we've got ourselves quite a lineup there. So if everyone will press star one to mute, and we'll start with Melissa C. Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, good morning, Lindsay. Thank you so much for your service this morning. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York, and, you know, I'm listening to Rick, I'm like, oh, freaking painful, you know, and I totally identify. I mean, I think about, for me, you know, self-pity. I feel like I was the queen of self-pity. Like, I just came here with so many horrific pains, and I felt so sorry for myself, you know, and I think there's a huge difference between grief, you know, and self-pity, and because grief is, you know, grief is a normal response to some loss and hardship, like all the things that Bill went through, all the things that I went through were painful, you know, but self-pity is like, leaves no room for human connection. It for me, when I think about self-pity, it's like using the losses and my grief as the great excuse for why I don't have to act in ways that I know I'm supposed to act. And that was the way that I lived. And, you know, and I think about what it was when food was my master. You know, when you're under the control, when you're owned, when you work, I mean, when you look up the word master, it means to be a slave of, to work for someone. And that's what it was like. Like, that's how food had me. It you know, it was a cruel master. It wasn't interested in sharing me with my family, you know, or anything. When it's your master, it's your only master. And, you know, I remember laying in bed at night, you know, after hearing a doctor tell me that I probably wasn't going to make it out of my 40s. And I would lay in bed at night. And every night I could hear my heart pounding in my ears, you know, in a resting state. I couldn't breathe. I was like having sleep apnea. I would snore myself awake. And I had babies that were across the hall from me, and I was terrified that they were going to wake up and find me dead, you know. And yet every morning, food is my master. What did I do? I went right back to the food, and it was lonely, you know. I was right there in the middle of this great, big, beautiful life, and I felt alone. And, you know, the only solution is if you're mastered by something is that you actually need a new master. That's what I needed. I needed no longer for food to be my boss, but I needed a great employer. And that employer is kind and loving and gracious, and it's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa C. from New York. And next up, Jason K. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Jason KP. I forgot to say the P because I'm still getting used to that. Rachel gave me a P, so I'm taking that. Recovered compulsive eater outside of Philadelphia, and so I have this weird refrain as we study this paragraph and we keep reading Bill's story. Like every new paragraph, there's this sort of thought coming to mind, like, how low can you go? And I think there's a silly song like that, or they sing this during the limbo contest, like, how low can you go? But, like, how low can Bill go? You know, it's just really amazing and baffling and mind-boggling, you know, to look at this descent into madness. And, you know, he's getting to this point where he's welcoming the thought that he's going to pass away from a heart attack during delirium tremens. He's welcoming it, and he's gone through periods of such intense despair that he's, you know, looking at the medicine cabinet and afraid he's going to jump out of a window. And he says no words can describe. And I think there's something powerful about having gone through this. I think it seems like alcohol kind of takes a quicker route in terms of deteriorating your mental, physical, and emotional, spiritual well-being. And food for me was this decades of decline, of just this sense of madness, of this just despair, you know. And he's talking about this in the sense of, like, there's this deep knowing, I think, like, when I talk with somebody from program and we start talking about our first step, we start talking about how much we suffered and the things we do. I think there's this knowing that's kind of beyond words. Like, we can really relive and revisit and understand that we've both been in that darkness. We've been in this deep, dark pit of despair. I just love the way Bill, you know, Bill doesn't just tell us, hey, the first step is we're powerless. He tells his story. He brings this to life in, you know, 4K Ultra HD through his words. He's describing in vivid detail this descent into madness, you know, and he gives a lot of text and space and time in the book to the first step. And right in this paragraph, I see him saying the first step in a different way. instead of saying I'm powerless over alcohol, my life had become unmanageable, he's saying it in different ways. And I love to just kind of sit with these different words and just let them resonate deep in my heart and soul and feel the power of the first step. You know, I've been overwhelmed, you know, food, compulsive eating. This was my master. I've met my match. This is just a powerful, powerful paragraph. And this first step is the foundation of our recovery. And I'm so glad Bill took the time to share his personal story and bring it out to life. And I think I'll pass with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason KP from, yeah. All right, next up is Darian K, followed by Krista F. Good morning, Darian.
Oh, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. Okay, this is Darian K in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. Very grateful to be on the line with my fellows and friends. I do like so much about the pictures that and the images that Bill allows us to see, you know, because none of us, well, I can't say none, but most of us didn't know him personally. Maybe there's a little handful, but I really want to know truthfully what he felt and what happened. And his, his story is so compelling. It just keeps you wanting to read on and on because it is a story of tragedy. Well, actually, it doesn't start out as tragedy. It just kind of start out as, you know, sort of that young person, sorrowfulness, and if that's a word, and then sort of in between going down a little bit, but then the hopelessness and tragicness, but then back to hope and an amazing, amazing program that we're all a part of today. And, you know, for me personally, I know that the loneliness, I felt the loneliness. I always felt, I don't know, like I just didn't fit into any, you know, cool crowd. You know, there was no spot for me. I wasn't, thank goodness, a druggie, or they called them the druggies, and those kind of people, or the Marines, or whatever. But I didn't fit in any place. I just felt very lonely. Just being heavy and overweight just really puts you in a place where you just can't, you know, dress like the cool kids. You know, like I work in the middle school and high school, and I see what these kids are wearing today, and it's like I couldn't look like that. I had to sort of look very different or try to find something, but my favorite color was black because I thought it hid everything. I just felt that loneliness and despair. And also, for me, I know that the elevator or whatever is going, will go further down if I were to pick up again. You know, I was just under 200 pounds in a size 18, 20 and just, you know, felt terrible about myself. But that, I know, I could go much lower than that because I did not eat the way I wanted to eat. And if I did, it would be a whole new low. So I'm just glad I'm, you know, able to remember that through this paragraph and to know that for today, I don't want to know where that could lead me. I don't want to be led to hopelessness. I want to remain hopeful. And every time I call in on this line, every time I share with all of you, I feel hopeful and I feel blessed. And I'll end with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Darian K. from Massachusetts. And then next up is Krista S., followed by Nancy T. Go ahead, Krista.
Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you for your service. Good morning. My name is Krista with a K, F as in Frank. I'm in Georgia, grateful, recover, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Rick, for the lead. The heaviness is so palpable in this paragraph. All I can think of when we read this is, for me, this is where I found the gift. I had to get to this paragraph to find the gift that would get me to even an inkling of hope that there could be recovery. And when I read it now, when we get to this place in the book, I know the rest of the story. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be so great. This is about the next paragraph. We're going to make the turn. But when I was in it, it felt like the end. And I just wanted to really share anybody that feels like this is the end. And I would think to myself, I'm just one of the, I'm just constitutionally incapable. Like, I'm one of the ones that's just never going to get it. And a friend said to me, Krista, there's going to be a moment of grace that's going to come. Everyone is eligible. A moment of grace is going to come, and don't pass it by. And it's something in that moment gave me hope. Like, I didn't have to decide right that second, but I could believe that maybe for me it would lift. And that is true. That is what happened. And I was able to reach out. And I just thought of, as we read this, the very same man, me, that had seemed doomed. That's how I felt, that had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for food, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. But I felt doomed. I felt like this is it. I'm one of the people that's just never going to get it. And suddenly, the moment of grace was able to come. I was able to reach out to someone and say, will you help me? And they said, can you just do these few things just for today? And I said, yes, I think I can do that. And that's how it began for me. And I'm so grateful for the hope. I'm so grateful for the bitter morass of self-pity, the bottom. And today I'm grateful to be abstinent. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you for your service, Lindsay.
Thank you, Krista F. from Georgia. And then next up, I have Nancy. I wrote T as in Tom, but I'm not sure I got your last initial correct. So if you'll please let us know.
Thanks, Lindsay. Nancy C. from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Gratefully recovered this morning. Thanks for your service. And Rick, great lead and great shares. You know, this whole month of shares have really been the culmination of what this paragraph says. You know, the loneliness and despair and the morass of self-pity. Everyone's bottom. Everyone has got a unique story, but everyone's story is the same. It's that self-pity and that morass that we can't get out of ourselves to see that God is around the corner. And, you know, I'm focusing in on the quicksand today, and that's the one place that I couldn't move anymore. You know, God had me in his grips. I could weasel out of anything. I could figure a way out of something and go find my way to go eat more and be farther and farther in bitter morass. But that word quicksand and thinking that if I struggle, I just go down further, that was my moment, as the person before me said, of grace, where God really said, Nancy, you're done. I mean, Bill wasn't quite done, but he was done, because I think God touched his heart that day and said, you don't need to be like this anymore. I know alcohol is your master today, but it can be something else, and it can be me. And when Bill can start looking, when I can start looking at that one moment that I took the turn to open my heart, miraculous things happen. You know, we start talking about the fourth dimension, and we start talking about all of the miraculous things that we have. We're never lonely again. I get on this meeting, I'm never lonely. My life is so amazing today because God picked me up from that cake plate and said, it's enough. Come follow me and all will be well. Putting down the food that I thought was my solution, my whole life, my one friend, my confidant, my companion, my lover, my friend, didn't work anymore. But oh my God, what I have found by turning away from the food and turning towards these 12 steps. So if you are new and very confused about what's going on, find somebody, take their hand, and walk through this book, because it clearly lays out how to find life beyond your wildest dreams. And I am really grateful to this program and everyone who does service in this meeting, where I found my first recovery. So with that, I pass. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thank you so much, Nancy C. from Michigan. And then quickly, if you were a little bit late logging on to the meeting, just want to let everyone know where we are. We are in Bill's story on page 8, the first paragraph, "No words can tell of the loneliness. Ending, alcohol was my master." And we've got three folks left in this lineup. We've got Charlotte T, Rachel KP, and Robin T. So Charlotte, go ahead and share with us, please. Charlotte, star one to unmute.
Okay, hold on.
I think we hear you now, Charlotte. Okay, maybe not. All right, let's go to Rachel KP, and then we'll come back to Charlotte. Rachel, go ahead.
Good morning. This is Rachel KP, recovered compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania. I had to share on this paragraph because it so exquisitely describes my experience in the disease. You know, this loneliness, this despair, this bitter morass of self-pity. And, you know, when I first came in to the rooms and started reading Bill's story, you know, my sponsor assigned me that chapter. She was like, you know, there's a lot you're not going to relate to, but pay attention to the things you do relate to, right? And the things that you don't, that's fine. You know, because in my disease, I look for any reason to not relate in, you know, and that's what I did when I first came into the rooms. And then, you know, I tried to fix this problem for 6 more years, and then I came back in, and I, you know, I was finally desperate enough. I was at that place of that bitter morass of self-pity where I was ready to just take whatever direction was given to me. And so I read this chapter, and the first time I read it, I didn't really relate to a lot. You know, I was like, what does this have to do with me? But then I read this paragraph and it was like, holy crap, this is me. And I just so relate into this bitter morass of self-pity, this quicksand. You know, in my disease, when I was in the food, I had these moments of what I call like existential dread, where I would, you know, tick through all the things that were wrong, that I perceived that were wrong with my life and that were unacceptable about me. And I just felt this sense of like hurt, like deep, deep hurt, melancholy and sadness and dread and loneliness. And, you know, and I just would be overcome with tears and like panic. And that to me is this experience of bitter morass of self-pity. That's just for me. But Bill so exquisitely described this experience that I had, and I knew like I'm in the right place. And that's where this disease took me, is this bitter morass of self-pity, this deep loneliness where, you know, I was so encumbered by shame of what I did with the food that I couldn't get out of it. You know, everything I had tried wasn't working. So then to come into these rooms and to hear other people share, right, and to read this book and to know, like, there is a solution. Right. Even though I don't know what's going to happen, even though I don't know, you know, what this is going to look like or how this could possibly work for me, I'm going to trust that this can work, you know. And once I know the problem, you know, as was described to Bill, right, once I know the problem, then I need to take action and work toward the solution. And I'm so grateful for this solution. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Rachel KP from Pennsylvania. All right, Charlotte P., I will come back to you. Are you able to unmute?
Yes, I'm so sorry. Technical difficulties. It's Charlotte T. from Nashville. I am so grateful to hear all these wonderful, wonderful shares. You know, this paragraph many, many years ago was the very first paragraph that I finally related to Bill's story. It was about the morass of self-pity. I could not climb out of the morass of self-pity. It was, you know, an amazing power that kept me in this disease, or self-defect, I guess I should say, that kept me in this disease. And, you know, it's interesting how I couldn't really relate to Bill. You know, I was a little girl from Mississippi, decided I wanted to find my career in New York, literally went straight from college to New York, found the job that I wanted, found the guy that I wanted, found the life that I wanted. And all that time, I was keeping my disease like a beach ball pushed down underwater through overexercise. And I wasn't binging. My disease hadn't progressed that much, but I was able to stay thin for most of the time. And when I could no longer hold that beach ball under the water, and I had done everything that everyone's ever talked about here, my weight ballooned to 235 pounds. I now weigh 155 pounds and have for, oh, I guess about 10 years. And the power of these words, I didn't remember that this was such a powerful paragraph for me until I started hearing your shares. And it's the power of these words, the loneliness, the despair, the bitter morass of self-pity. I had met my match. I was overwhelmed. I can't say more than anyone else has said so beautifully, but I want people to know that I identified with this paragraph very early on, years and years before I got abstinent. And if you're identifying with this paragraph, you are one of us. And there is hope and there is grace. And I live a beautiful life now. I'm comfortable physically. I have all this beautiful community for support. And in addition to that, I'm taking like a once-in-a-lifetime trip on Saturday. And I will be gone a long time. And I am taking you all with me, and I've already found out through the time changes that I'll be able to be on this meeting at 9 p.m. in that country. So I'm just so, so very grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlotte T. from Tennessee. And then Robin P., you're up next. And then after Robin, we will take another group of people to share. So good morning, Robin.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for your service. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Costa Rica. And wow, oh, I'm so grateful for this meeting today. It's such a blessing to hear everybody. You know, when I hit bottom 8 years ago, by God's grace and mercy, I felt that same feeling, like I thought it was the end. I just really wanted to die. And I knew I would never kill myself, but I just kept praying, God, if you exist, please let me die. And instead, I found myself on a phone line and listening to a meeting and getting a sponsor, and my life turned around. And it's just such a miracle. It's such a blessing to finally hit bottom. And he's not even there yet. He's almost there. It's when you know that you're done, you know, the end of the road. And I always ask sponsees, just like I was asked, you know, are you done? You know, are you willing to go to any lengths to recover? And if somebody says they're not, I just say, just pray to hit bottom, you know, because I think you just have to get, at least I had to get to the end of me and be willing to reach up and reach out. And, you know, I had so much shame. I grew up in a lot of child abuse and so much shame and so much fear of asking for help. And I feel like that positive vulnerability is the antidote to shame. And I just had to keep practicing, you know, those words, can you help me? And it's a very vulnerable feeling. And I'm just so grateful for the willingness, and I'm so grateful for other people's willingness when they ask me for help. You know, it's such a blessing that Bill's such a great writer. I always think of what a great writer he is. And I can feel, it's palpable to me. I just remember those feelings, the loneliness and despair and the bitter morass of self-pity. I was so alone with the food. And definitely food was my master. If any time I didn't have any other recourse, if I had the thought it was Russian roulette, just go eat, I would just go eat. I didn't have a no. I didn't have another solution. It's just food was my God. It's what I went to for everything. I'm so grateful for Vision. I'm so grateful for all of you and for God. It's literally a modern day miracle. God bless everybody with a very blessed abstinent day. I pass.
Thank you, Robin P. from Costa Rica. All right, I will now take another group of people to share on this paragraph. So if you'd like to share, please press star one to unmute and give me your first name and the first initial of your last name.
Carolyn S. Jackie M.
Lynette.
Carolyn S. from New York.
Larry G. California.
Ellie M. P.
All right, I'll tell you who I have. I have Jackie M., Len S., Larry G., and Joanne P. So who did I miss?
I'm going to share in this paragraph.
Okay. Who else would like to share?
Loretta H.
All right. So I've got Jackie, Lynn, Larry, Joanne, and Loretta. So we will start with Jackie M. Please go ahead and share with us. Jackie, star one.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Good morning.
I'm so sorry. Okay, good morning. I have to share. This is so relevant. I'm only 10 days out of that bitter morass of self-pity, God willing, one day at a time. And I could just feel it, you know, when I first read this morning. It just overwhelmed me with emotion because every day of my life, despite all of my blessings outside of food, I just couldn't see past that loneliness and despair I felt, and quicksand stretching around me in all directions. I felt zero hope. I felt zero hope. I thought I was one of those people who were mentally incapable of getting through, you know, to get some abstinence behind me so I could begin to recover. And I truly feel like with food, I have met my match. I mean, I've been in and out of OA for 13 years, and I've been in relapse for 8 years. And despite, you know, a few good stretches of abstinence in those 13 years, it's been mostly in relapse. And this is it for me. I know, you know, this is my solution, but, you know, just really feeling that despair constantly, just constantly knowing, and, you know, where we wear our disease, it's shameful, and it's so lonely. Like, I had isolated myself completely. I don't, you know, want anyone to see me that I haven't seen in the last, and even people I have seen, I'm just terrified of the judgment and just knowing that I'm incapable of managing my life because of the food. The food truly is my master, and I have zero control over it without this program. So anyway, felt like I needed to share that. Thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Jackie M. And where are you calling from this morning?
I'm sorry, I'm in New Hampshire.
Jackie M. in New Hampshire. All right, next up, I believe I heard Lynn S.
Good morning. This is Lynn S., recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada.
This paragraph is really speaking to me because that's exactly where I was January. Let's just say from January to June of this year in program, not in the food yet, but in program, the loneliness, the despair, the self-pity, quicksand stretched around me, but I'm not in the food. So I'm thinking, not I'm okay, but I can't understand what's wrong. When it was so clear to me, what's wrong was I had stopped doing the do things little by little. Gee, Lynn, you know, you're not going to your home group anymore or hit and miss. Oh, well. Gee, Lynn, you're a little bit resentful. You're a little bit afraid. Yeah, it's not that bad. I've got it. Or, you know, it's okay. Or it doesn't really bother me. That was a big one. No big deal. Oh, well. I'd been speaking to somebody about them coming to Toronto to do a retreat. And they asked me about it. And they said, what happened with that? And I said, I decided to take a back seat on that. Well, I fell right off the bus and I didn't even know it. Oh, well. People weren't doing the meetings right. Things weren't going right. No big deal. I'm here. I wonder what's wrong with me. Until finally, I didn't even realize it, but I couldn't hang on anymore. And I picked up the food and went into a 6-day relapse. And you know, I couldn't see. That's not true. I was just going to say I couldn't see any of it. I could see all of it. And you know what? I just didn't care. Thank you, God, I'm not there anymore. But this paragraph really just brought home complacency, the stopping of the doing of the do things little by little can only lead to one place for me. And that's complete loneliness and despair in this incredible, wonderful program that God has offered me, because I'm not following the directions that He gave us in the first 164 pages that saved my life. I am so grateful to be on the other side of that and enthusiastically throwing myself into those pages of the book. It works, it really does. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lynn S. from Toronto in Canada. And next up is Larry G., followed by Joanne P. Good morning, Larry.
Thank you, moderator. My name is Larry G. from California. Oh, my God, these shares over the last couple of weeks have just been so inspiring, people identifying with Bill. I found vision about 4 years ago. And it's been the fellowship that I've been longing for. I just love the fact that we are our models based on the first 100 pioneers, and we study the big book, and we have a black and white approach to abstinence, and we support each other to have that kind of black and white abstinence, which is defined in the doctor's opinion. God, I just relate to this story. In May of 2020, the weekend before I surrendered on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I had the weekend from hell. I was consuming 20,000 calories on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And by Sunday afternoon, I was so sick, I thought about checking in the hospital. I had the food that I was eating just seeping out of my pores. But I had one more fight in me. I had one more fight. I dialed up a live stream, watched Rocky Balboa, had a was inspired by that, went out and bought a new workout outfit, and from Monday through Friday, I'd get up at 5 a.m., I hit the gym, weights, bike, swim in the pool, sauna, go home, restrict, have about 1,200 calories from Monday through Friday, and I lost 15 pounds, and I felt, man, I'm on the way, I was so high with that I finally thought, hey, I beat it, and then that clear mental thought, a procedure relapse. Larry, go on. You need to reward yourself, man. Dude, you've done really well. You have been so on it. And And that began a plunge into hell, because on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I ate another, 20,000 calories a day and just was so defeated. I just wanted to die. I remember the morning before I was 12-step in the vision, I was thinking I was two months away from my 39th birthday in AA, and I said, I don't want to live like this. If this is sobriety, I can have it. And I wanted to off myself, and I didn't have the guts to do that. But I found this program was 12-step by a Visions member, and the first day, the calls, I was on the 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Pacific, and I swear to God, I felt I was in an AA revival. I heard a message that I had never heard in OA before. And I'm not comparing this fellowship with any of the other fellowships I've been to. Those fellowships got me here, and those fellowships work for a lot of people. But I am the variety that I need black and white absence. I cannot have any crack in the door. I can't have any gray area, because my addict will take advantage of that. And so it's all or nothing. I'm either in or I'm not. And so I surrender the doctor's opinion. And yes, entire absence, where that's the answer. I can't even have one teaspoon of my alcoholic foods. And with that, I pass back to you, Marie.
Thank you, Larry G. in California. And next up is Joanne P. And then Loretta, we may or may not have time for your share. We shall see. So Joanne, go ahead. Share with us, please.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Joanne P. from Pennsylvania. And so, so grateful to be here today. Wow, this paragraph just takes me back to who I was when I found OA. And it was only the end of August, the beginning of September of 2020, that this was me. No words could tell of the loneliness and despair that I was feeling. I knew I was either going to die or drop dead of a heart attack or something. Yeah. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. It wasn't until it was God really that rescued me. And I am so thankful, because I spent my whole life in this disease. Most of my whole life, I should say. I'm still living. And so thankful to God that, I have found, I found my higher power. I have found you all. And Bill's story just is saving my life. You're my daily reprieve. You're my medicine. You're what gets me through each day, because food was my master. And by the grace of God, I learned that I had a disease, that I have an obsession of the mind, that I am powerless. And it took me a while, and it took me, like Bill, as desperate as I was and as awful as I felt when I came in here, I was so thankful to find out that I didn't need a psychiatrist. I had a disease. I had an obsession of the mind, and there was a solution, and that solution was to abandon myself to my higher power, to follow the steps of this WE program. We are in this together, and we help each other. And it was the acceptance and the humility of my disease. And I, like Bill, wasn't done yet. I did continue to relapse, trying to figure this all out, but never leaving, never giving up, waiting for the miracle to happen. And knowing that, it just brings tears to my eyes that my higher power rescued me, really, and brought me to you so that I could end my life in a new place, in a place where I have complete surrender and am able to face life on life's terms, knowing that there is a solution and that we are all here together to help each other. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne P. And it is now time to close. So Loretta, hopefully you are able to stay for the second hour. So thank you so much to everyone who shared and to everyone who gave service for Team Thursday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. And the share ID for today, Thursday, March 7th, is 21,204. That is 21204. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Nancy C. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly discover more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.